Checking on the Arts is made possible by Germantown Performing Arts Center and by the Orpheum Theater. And speaking of GPAC, on Halloween weekend, the Tennessee Shakespeare Company is opening their season with Richard III. Dan McCleary, of course, is the founder and producing artistic director. Is that right?
That's right.
Something like that.
That's
okay.
Right.
And he's joined me today, and he's also playing Richard III. And this is a very exciting thing. I've been reading on your website about what you're doing with this play. Now, you like to employ framing devices. You like to mess around with the way that we look at these plays, I know, and I think you're really doing that here, and there's a good reason for it. So tell us what you're doing with Richard III.
Well, you know, Shakespeare messed around with them too. You know, he
Truly.
Certainly messed around with the histories. And he certainly messed around with the things he pilfered, which was much of what he wrote. And so what we'll have a tendency to do with Shakespeare, and certainly what I will, is consider it for right now, mm-hmm. at this hour, mm-hmm. and where mm-hmm. we are in this geography, and certainly specifically for our audiences. And Richard III, which is a play that I've acted in before, I didn't ever quite see the level of spirituality that's in it. You mm-hmm. know, it usually gets considered as and played as this grotesquerie, this sort of very early play of Shakespeare's. And it would be a history, but it's printed in the First Folio as a tragedy. And so it's really not quite here nor there, but, you know, dramaturgically speaking, it's slightly awkward. And so what a lot of productions tend to do is lean into the violence of the play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Machiavelli, you know, the Richard III is really the model for Machiavellian villainy. And while this is true, you know, Shakespeare was, I think, really setting himself up for Macbeth and mm-hmm. Hamlet mm-hmm. and Lear and Antony and Brutus and Julius Caesar, all of these people for whom their subconscious finally awakes. And they articulate it. And what gets overlooked in Richard III is that Richard III awakens to his crimes. But also Richard at the time of his death, this is 1485, you know, Richard III, an actual person. At the time of his death, what people looked like physically was a stamp of God, was a stamp of the heavens. And it was then, your fortune was set for you then. And so you played your role in life. Richard III, Shakespeare wrote, and you know, as a bunchbacked toad, for
right,
instance,
right,
or the bottled spider, all of these things that are quite fascinating to talk about and easy to market and easy to sell. And Richard III has been a fabulously popular play
mm-hmm.
since it was written. But you know, the fact of the matter is, and I'm taking, as I usually do, the long way around the barn to answer your question, society today
mm-hmm.
unearthed, finally, Richard III's bones.
Right.
2 years ago.
Right.
By the University of Leicester near London, and with the help of the Richard III Society. And the Richard III Society believing that the true King Richard III wasn't the deformed animal or boar that Shakespeare made him out to be. In fact, what we see is, and what we're incorporating into our production, is the reality that his bones remain now disinterred. They were unearthed 2 years ago on the very first day of the excavation from under a parking lot
mm-hmm.
in a friary. And what they found, I mean, the images of the remains, it's quite pathetic and painful looking. And so what's been determined in the last year and a half, and they'll reinter his bones in a cathedral in early next year,
right,
is he did not have the deformity of the hand and some other things that Shakespeare wrote about, but his spine,
mm-hmm.
since the age of 10 at least, suffered from an extraordinary C, the letter C. His spine does this terrible bend,
mm-hmm.
making him short and hunched. And fortunately, he was of some means and money, so he could. He probably had to live his life in wartime,
mm-hmm.
clothing, in armor, and we're playing him on crutches that are made of weapons, so that where his weaknesses are, in fact, are now where his strengths are. And the fact of the matter is, Richard, he was born into war.
Right.
He's a child
right.
of war.
Mm-hmm.
He knows nothing other than war. He's watched his family members get killed. He was physically, for that time, grotesque, feeling as if God had stamped him thus. And so he, by the age of 16 or 17, is in the vanguard fighting for his brother. And he was an extraordinarily successful warrior until the Battle of Bosworth Field, which was his downfall. He's the last English monarch to die on the field. He was hit in the back
mm-hmm.
with arrows and halberds and axes and into the head, 11 blows, two of them at least lethal. And then he was thrown, evidently, into a pit after he was wounded, after he had died. And so what we're doing in this production is we're rebuilding the excavation site on stage at GPAC. And audiences will be there with our hard hat folks, and we'll bring Richard out of the pit, and we'll awaken him like the cadaver synods of the Middle Ages, where they unearthed the bones, put them in the priestly robes, and then retried them with new evidence, like we do today, with new
right.
DNA evidence. You know, so it's very modern, and we'll bring Richard to life to reconsider his life. And so there's two narratives moving, Shakespeare's narrative and then your narrative, the audience's narrative, to reconsider why these acts had to be committed and what relationship he, and indeed we, have to God and our fortune, and what life we have after this earthly life.
We're talking about Richard III. It's the opener for Tennessee Shakespeare Company at Germantown Performing Arts Center. There are only three public performances, Thursday, October 30th at 7, Friday, October 31st, Halloween night at 7, and Saturday, November 1st, also at 7. So if you want tickets, you better get them now, 759-0604, or online at tnshakespeare.org. And I understand that you're already filling up pretty rapidly because you're doing Free Will Kids Night on all three nights.
Yes. Well, we want, you know, this is... I should say, you know, this doesn't really serve us as a Shakespeare company doing just three performances. It's a bit more of an opera schedule. As an actor, we like to be able to breathe into the text and live it a little bit more, so that maybe after about 3 months, we feel like we're ready to be seen and share the experience with an audience. But this is the time that we could get, and we're very grateful for it. And this is the first time we've offered all of our performances to our Free Will Kids Night. And we wondered if Halloween would be successful or not for us. Richard III actually is quite a nice title for Halloween for this time of season, All Hallows Eve, a reconsideration of souls past and where their lives move to next, a question for all of us. And so what we're finding is a number of young people want to come spend Halloween with us, and there are a number of older people who might recede to their basement during trick-or-treat who are choosing to come join us for Halloween.
Now, in addition to the play itself and your opening device of digging up Richard, literally, you're using some additional material. You're bringing some material in from outside of the play.
Yes, well, Richard III, the play, and by the way, one needn't know a jot about history.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Not just appreciate the play, but love it, because Shakespeare knew this, of course, and he was writing England into history, and so he was playing around quite a lot with the truth, as he always did. It was very fast and loose, and if it wasn't going to hold the groundlings for more than 5 seconds, he wasn't going to write it in.
Right,
and so one needn't know anything about it. We fill you in as we go along. It's quite soap opera.
Oh, very much so. The Wars of the Roses, yeah.
And so, yes, indeed. So this is the end of the Wars of the Roses. With Richard's death comes the end of the Wars of the Roses, which is really a civil war,
mm-hmm.
which is always a strange term for me to say. But yes, it's a war of between two lineages, the Yorkists and the Lancastrians, and of course the man whose army defeats Richard III on the battlefield ultimately becomes Henry VII, the beginning of the Tudor line, and begets Queen Elizabeth, who's the queen at the time of Shakespeare's writing of this. And so Shakespeare was writing this after he had gotten into the Henry VI plays, Henry VI Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. Mm-hmm. So we're using some text from that, which describes the Duke of Gloucester, who later becomes King Richard III. And Richard III actually appears in these previous plays. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we're picking up some text from a few other plays as well, a little bit from Macbeth and Edward III and a couple of other plays where the supernatural comes into play. So all the text is Shakespeare's, but in between the narrative of Richard, we have a chorus, almost like a Greek chorus,
right.
who plays you, the audience, in reconsidering our lives. But they reconsider it with Shakespeare's text. They're checking in every step of the way with every act. And no sooner does Richard become king. You know, when you look at verse lines in the first folio of Shakespeare, that's the greatest director of all. And he writes, of course, in 10 beats a line in the verse line. And there's this wonderful, wonderful half line where he becomes king. Now is King Richard seated. And then there's space on the page. And it's in just that little space, those little three beats, that he's content, that he's achieved. He thinks he'll be a good king.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what it takes to get there.
Right.
He'll get there, and his hands won't be bloody, he believes. Any means possible, as long as he becomes king. So he brings peace to England. This is his firm belief, said the actor who's defending Richard III. And so in that moment, there's content, and no sooner does he say that than he starts considering the death of a child, the death of children. And so as these things start to creep in, his subconscious starts to awake. Shakespeare starts writing all of these half lines and internal questions of Richard, which is really more Macbethian than Macbeth.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So we're using those as cues for the chorus to come in and compel Richard to continue telling a murderous tale for you, the audience. Otherwise, Richard, at least the way that I'm dealing with it right now, I'd bail out.
Mm-hmm.
I know better. Now I know where I'm headed.
Right.
But no, I need to tell the story. But so we're forced to tell the story. And last night in rehearsal, I didn't want to tell it, so I did bail out. So I was made to go back in. So I hope we get to the end when everyone comes.
A couple of years ago, you and Stephanie did your two-person fundraising program at Germantown Performing Arts Center, and I was there, and you did a bit from Richard III there, and I was very impressed with the way you inhabited that role physically. And I wonder now if the discovery of his bones and the discovery of what his actual deformity was, has that in any way informed the way you're approaching this physically?
It has. You know, WKNO had this wonderful show, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, where they hired a young man in England who had a very similar spinal condition to
scoliosis.
That's right, but especially this wicked C in the mm-hmm. middle of his back. Because mm-hmm. you look at it and you go, this man couldn't move, let alone be a fighting general in a ground force. But that's not what was discovered. You know, that he needed support. It often hurt his internal organs. He found himself wanting for breath, but he was not immobile. He needed certain supports. So when I've played the role before, we looked specifically at, you know, dealing with the arm mm-hmm. and the hand mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. we protect that side of the body, and potentially a leg condition, a polio condition,
right,
which does a terrible damage, you know, physically to the actor's body. He said knowingly. So this is we've done actually quite a lot of research on this, and so we've. In using the forearm crutches, which are weapons all the time, Richard is always armed for war.
Mm-hmm.
And in so being, he is also giving support to his internal organs. He's protecting his weakest part, which is his spine. And he doesn't need the crutches to walk. he needs them to rest, and he needs them for elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And if people get close to his weakest part, you know, we're having a halberd on the left side, so that he's always he always has a defensive position, and a mace on the other crutch. Then he's always got an extended, almost like a spear, for a right arm. So the crutches are like extensions of the body; they almost never leave. But you know, for the rest of it, there's quite a lot of surprising mobility. So to answer your question, yes, it's been reconsidered. And other than just the fact that, you know, my body is old, I'll be more flexible and facile and agile than probably what we saw a year ago and under the breach.
Well, this is a very exciting thing. I know that you're extremely pleased to be doing it. You've brought in some wonderful folks for the rest of your cast, folks that you have worked with many times before here at Tennessee Shakespeare Festival Company, and Bruce Bowie is doing your costumes, so we know
fabulous.
Those are going to be gorgeous.
Yes.
It's very exciting, and I know you've got to be thrilled to be doing this. I suspect you've been waiting to do this for a while.
I hadn't planned on it, but... It seemed that with the time we were given in GPAC, together with our board's inspiration and the desire of a number of our patrons, that it was the right time. Acting and directing and producing, they're all very, very different things. And for us, you know, it's a very different energy. But for a Shakespeare actor, if you don't do it regularly, you know, it's not like getting back on a bike. It's spiritual for us.
Sure.
And it was for Shakespeare. And so the people we brought back are, this is work for whom it's, I hope this isn't taken the wrong way, but especially with this play, you know, it's a holy work for us, and we only get three chances to do it. So we're not wasting any time in rehearsal. Every day is we come in and we bless the space and we get to work. It's feels very important.
Richard III opening the new season for Tennessee Shakespeare Company. It is only three performances, October 30th, October 31st, Halloween night, and Saturday, November 1st, all at 7 p.m. And if you want tickets, you better get them now, 7590604, or online at tnshakespeare.org. And not a lot of space left, so I encourage you to go ahead and do that. My guest today, Dan McClary, founder and producing artistic director at Tennessee Shakespeare Company, and playing Richard III. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Daryl. A pleasure.
Checking on the Arts is made possible by contributing listeners and by the Germantown Performing Arts Center, celebrating its 20th anniversary season with the great jazz vocal team of John Pizzarelli and his wife, Jessica Mulaski, on November 2nd. Information and tickets available at the GPAC box office, 751-7500, or online at gpacweb.com. And by the Orpheum Theater, presenting Alton Brown live in his Edible Inevitable Tour. The Food Network star brings his quirky humor and culinary science antics to the stage on Saturday, October 25th. At 7:30 p.m. For information, 525-3000 or orpheum-memphis.com.